A very good morning to you, my dear listeners. Very good morning to you, Namibia. Welcome to Eagle FM. And so we're coming to you through, you know, Windhoek studio connections. So we have some technical hiccups. So we hope that it will be, you know, sorted out very soon. So yeah, good morning and welcome to Eagle FM. This is your number one talk radio station. Thank you, David, for making sure that we continue. Welcome to Eagle FM and welcome to Unpacking the Day, your daily dose of what is really going on in terms of business news, economic news, and political news. So my name is Mike Oshoveli. So every weekday, we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, trends, and numbers making headlines. So we keep it clear and always curious, asking questions that matter and giving you a fresh take of what people are saying out there. So the views shared during our segment do not necessarily reflect those of Eagle FM. We are here to unpack what others are saying and spark a meaningful conversation for you so that you can take part in the bigger conversation. So this is your space to unpack with me the headlines and get to the heart of these stories. So good morning and welcome. Welcome. As usual, we normally go through history. We go through our history, looking at what happened on this day in Africa. So the 19th of February, today we only probably have one major milestone to talk about, and that's the first that's the opening of the first Pan-African Congress in 1919. So the first Pan-African Congress opened on 19th of February 1999 in Paris, organized by prominent African and diaspora leaders such as W.E.B. Du Bois. And this gathering brought together the delegates from multiple countries to address issues like colonial rules, Russia discrimination, and Africa self-determination after World War One. So basically, that's all we have. That's the only significant event that we can bring you today as we look at the history books for today. So, and our thought for the day this morning. So it's Thursday morning, February the 19th. Our thought for the day is a wise man fight to win, a fool fight to prove, the fool fight to prove he is right. So a wise man fights to win, a fool fight to prove he is right. So the Proverbs, contrast two approaches to conflict or challenge or challenges, highlighting the differences between strategic thinking and ego-driven behavior. Now, the proverb means that wise person focus on achieving a successful outcome or resolving a conflict effectively, prioritizing practical result over ego. And in contrast, a fool person engages in conflict mainly to defend their ego or prove their correctness, often at the cost of losing sight of the bigger picture or the actual goals. So in it highlights, the proverb actually highlights the value of strategic thinking and humility over stubbornness and pride in dispute, when you are in dispute. So whatever decision you're making today and choices you make, make sure that they are not ego-driven behavior. So a wise man fight to win, you fight to win, and a fool fight to prove he is right. So when we come back, we look at what we have for you, in store for you on the show this morning. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a second.
When you choose UNAM,
you get credible accreditation.
You get internationally recognized qualifications.
You get a university with a growing reputation.
When you choose UNAM,
you get a head start on local jobs.
You become connected in a growing Namibia.
You stay in the best country in the world.
Because you already know you love it here.
Open your mind to UNAM.
And UNAM will open the world to you.
UNAM is your university, Namibia.
Because the U in UNAM is you.
There's no price like the ShopRite price. We commit to bring you lower prices on all the essentials you need, like 2 kg real good frozen mixed chicken portions for only $99.99 and 500 grams Polana elbows, macaroni or spaghetti pasta for just $13.99 each. Never pay more than the ShopRite price. Valid until 22 February 2026. Only at ShopRite. Catch Ready, Steady, Cook on One Africa. Proudly brought to you by ShopRite Namibia.
Never pay more than the ShopRite price. Valid until 22 February 2026. Only at ShopRite. Catch Ready, Steady, Cook on One Africa. Proudly brought to you by ShopRite Namibia. Never pay more than the ShopRite price. Valid until 22 February 2026.
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the I.
The University of Namibia, welcome back. The University of Namibia is pleased to announce the continuation of the UNAM Readiness Program in 2026 for equitable access to higher education. The program is specifically designed for prospective students aiming to enroll in UNAM undergraduate qualifications, excluding professionally regulated programs. The readiness program is intended for learners who have done NSSCAS, NSSCO, and NSCH / HISC, HC, or equivalent, but do not meet the minimum UNAM admission requirement. Applications are completed online via the UNAM website. So www.unam.edu.na/online-application. So prospective students are encouraged to apply by 20th of February 2026 and consult official UNAM platform for admission requirements. So you have 2 days, you have today and tomorrow to apply for your UNAM readiness program. All right, so good morning and welcome. So, yeah, the problem has just sorted out. We are coming to you direct. We are coming to you from, now we're coming to you directly from Ondangwa Studio. And our line is also available that we'll be able now, you know, to come through when we come to that point. So what do we expect? What do we have? What are we looking for in the show? So, a higher-level economic dialogue that took place in Windhoek recently has identified a public procurement bottlenecks, youth unemployment, and lack of policy certainty as the critical challenges the upcoming national budget must address. So, in a few minutes, I will be contacting my guests on the show to go a little bit deeper into this, to tell us about this high level economic dialogue. So, and it's, the show is really fully packed. What we have also, the unemployment of 34.4% possess a major economic challenge for the Commerce region as its population actually approach a 500,000 population, half a million population. So we're going to look at that as well. And and if we have time, we're also going to look at a very interesting piece that looking at why the Africa trade bloc have failed from achieving meaningful continental integrations. And it's looking at four challenges. So colonial legacies, informal economics, economies, and institutional redundancy and mission creep. So those are the four challenges that this piece is looking at, and it's very interesting to analyze. So if we have a time, we're going to go get, we will get into that as well. And also, any other news that we may get for you. So stay tuned. When we come back, we see if we can get our, guests online. So stay tuned.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna I matina omjo chikao shafathana nana nongeshifa ya eshiwike moshiwana iye moyao ota ingongotitha mwene anangeshifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa nawa olonjika zeitha nina omayakuro nirandithoma yoe yongeshifa yoe okupitiramo Eagle FM Media House ngoe tuende tuimemeha uka kombanga nina Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yo mo programa detu. Moambo, dengira selma, onarahi tatuimu. Datundatu, heari hamano tano, oniyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter.
A very good morning to you. Welcome back. We were just actually trying to get our guests, and it looks like the number is not available at the moment. So we give him a bit of time. And then we'll reach to him again. So let's try, we will try him, a little bit later, again. So good morning. Good morning, Namibia, and welcome back to Unpacking the Day. So I'm your host, Mike Oshoveli. And, so let's get into the, today we need to talk about the Commerce Region, okay? So, yeah, let's talk about Commerce Region. So a region that's a home nearly to 500,000 people where urbanization and growth have been rapid, but unfortunately so has the unemployment rate in the Commerce Region. So the new data from the 2023 population and housing census are telling us a story, I think, that we cannot ignore anymore and that we need to look at. So the Commerce Region, which of course include our capital, the capital city, our Windhoek, so has become one of the most urbanized area in Namibia. So when you think about it, so this is where, well, the action actually is supposed to be. Windhoek is where everything is supposed to be. This is where the ministries are. This is where the business clusters are. This is where embassies are. So, yeah, this is as city as Namibia gets, you know? So this is where everything is happening. So the 2023 census paints a very clear picture. So the region is almost entirely urban. So 98.3% of the people live in cities or towns. So, and remember, when we're talking about, you know, Commerce Region, we're not only talking about Windhoek. So then it sounds great that almost 98.3% of people actually live in cities, or they live in the city or they live in towns. So, because, urbanization is actually a sign of progress, I think. Urbanization, well, depending on from what side of or from which angle you're looking at. So, but urbanization is usually a sign of progress, and but with this growth comes the pressure now. With this kind of growth comes the pressure of resources, come pressure of jobs, come pressure of infrastructure. So the more people, the more service we need, the more jobs we have to create. And yet here we are with 34.4% of those actively seeking work unable to land a job. So that actually in Windhoek, this is in Windhoek. Now, out of every 10 people in commerce. So out of every 10 people in commerce, region, people who are willing to work, more than 3 of them are sitting at home with nothing to do. Out of 10, these are people now in commerce region, with the people that are able, maybe they're even qualified, and they're willing to work, more than three of them are sitting at home as we speak with nothing to do. So 34.4% unemployment. Okay? So 34.4% unemployment in commerce region. So, and this is coming from, as I said, from the 2023 census, house and population, census that was taken, from 2023 population and housing census that was taken in 2023. So now we have to think what that means. Okay. We have to think what that means. When we say as I said, you know, the 34.4%, the number of people that are actually, you know, sitting at home, doing nothing at all. So, and the report also tells us that 65% of labor force is employed. 65% of labor force is employed. But here is an issue. Here is the issue. And this is where now I think it gets a little bit depressing, really depressing, because almost 95% of those who are aren't in the labor force, who are not in the labor force at all, have given up, you know. So it's the people who have given up. These are what the statistician call discouraged job seekers. So who are actually, you know, think about it, what that means. These are not lazy people. It's not like these are some kind of lazy people. No, these are your neighbors, your cousins, your former classmate who have knocked on so many doors that their knuckles now are raw, something. You know, they have sent out so many CVs that they have lost count. This is the people that we're talking about. And now they are simply stop trying. So they are not even counted in that 34% unemployment figure because they have disappeared from the statistic entirely. So, yeah, now, and this is not just statistics. And as I said, that's why I love numbers. These are not just statistics. It's a sign of a system that is actually failing to meet the needs of its people. This is a sign of a system that failing to meet the needs of its people. Now, so why are we seeing this? Why are we seeing this in commerce? Let's think about it. We have high literacy. This is now in Windhoek. We have a high literacy of 90, not in Windhoek. I mean, this is commerce. 95.5 of people age 15 and older are literate. Okay? So, and yet only 19.6, we're going to analyze this. Stay tuned.
Great news. IMPA just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMPA? Get all exclusive features for just $36 a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMPA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMPA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
No matter where you are.
All right, welcome back. And if you're just joining us, thanks for joining us. And we love being in your company. So, yeah. So now, there's something here. As I said, why we're seeing this in commerce. And we have, in commerce, we have actually a higher literacy of 95.5% of people, you know, 95.5 of people age between, you know, age 15 and older are literate. Okay. Now, yet, if you look at the data, if you look at the statistics, and this is very telling. And sometimes this is why we don't pay attention to numbers. And only 19.6% of the population has a tertiary education. You know, only 19.6 of the population that's in commerce, this half a million population that we're talking about, only 19.6 of that population has tertiary education. And even fewer, just around 31% finish secondary school. Now, think about that, really. Analyze that a little bit, you know? So now, when we talk about unemployment, so the gap between education and employment is evident. So we're talking about 19.6% of the population has, only 19% of that has tertiary education. And just about 31% finish secondary school. Now, as I said, the gap between education and employment, it's quite evident. So now, my question is, is there a disconnect between what the workforce maybe needs and what people are qualified for? And if so, how do we bridge that gap? So, because as we can see, there is that gap. There is that disconnect. And that's why you have this huge number of people unemployed. Even if you have a smaller number of people that have actually obtained tertiary education, but you have a bigger number of people that is unemployed. So, and this is just this is not just a commerce region problem, or even Namibia problem. I think this is an African urban story playing out in real time here. So, across the continent, cities are really swelling. Yeah? It's like your wounds; they are swelling. Lagos, whether you go to Lagos, we go to Nairobi, Accra, Lusaka, people are flooding, you know, they are flooding in from rural area because that's where the lights are brighter. That's where the promises are bigger. So, but what happened when the cities can't deliver? What happened when the cities can't deliver? What happened when the job simply aren't there? So Namibia's unemployment rate in commerce actually mirrors what we are seeing anywhere. Eh? It mirrors exactly what we are seeing anywhere. What we are seeing in Johannesburg, what we are seeing in Harare, what we are seeing in Dar es Salaam. It mirrors that. So young people, educated people, capable, you know, capable people sitting idle while the cost of living actually goes up and opportunities shrink, absolutely shrink. So this is the powder key. That's a powder keg of modern Africa. So, and while there is a lot of focus on the challenges, well, there are also a few bright spots on, a bright spot too. There are also some bright spot. More than 98% of homes, according to the data, according to the statistics, 98% of homes in commerce in the region have access to safe drinking water, and more than 60% have electricity for lighting. So that's also good news. I think that's a progress, no doubt, definitely. But as we know, basic services don't solve the bigger issue of unemployment. So you can have all the water and power, you can have all the water and power you want, but without a stable income, so how do you make the most of these of services available? So so that's what now let's also not forget that commerce is not just Windhoek, you know, it's not just about Windhoek. So while the city is, you know, is a bustling center hub, you know, rural areas still struggle in the commerce. So it's a mixed bag where households in the urban areas have, you know, smartphones and electricities, but a good chunk of the population, it doesn't even have access. It doesn't even have access to proper toilets facilities. And it says 17% still don't have the toilet facilities, according to the stats. 17%. So that means that in our most urbanized region, you know, you guys, the Windhoek people, the most urbanized region, nearly one in five households, nearly one in five has nowhere proper to go. The people have nowhere proper to, a proper, you know, sanitation, a proper place to go to the bathroom. They have nowhere. One in five households, okay? They have no proper, you know, a place to go to the bathroom. And what does that tell us? Huh? What does that tell us? It tells us a growth is happening faster than planning. Hmm? What it tells us that the growth of the region is, especially if we talk about the city like Windhoek, so the growth is happening faster than the planning. So the city is busting at higher pace. Infrastructure is actually struggling to keep up. Now, when you think about it this now, seriously, and think seriously about this now. If you cannot build, seriously, if you cannot build toilet fast enough, this is now what I'm thinking in my own head, okay, in my little head, with little brain. Some of you have bigger brain than I am, you know. So if you can't build toilets fast enough, how are you going to build factories? Now, seriously, I'm asking, if you cannot even build, you know, faster, if you cannot build toilet faster enough, how are you going to build factories? How are you going to build the workplaces that will employ those 34.4%? How are you going to build workplaces that will employ that 34.4%? How are you going to employ those 34.4%? It's just a question. It's just thinking, you know. So, and And here's another piece that I think should worry you and should worry every one of us. Out of nearly 62,000 children under the age of 5 in commerce, less than 30% are in early childhood development program. Less than 30%. Now, out of 62,000 children under the age of 5, it's only less than 32% are in early childhood development program. So, why is this an issue? Do you see a problem here? Because, now, see this. Okay, this is the way I see it. Yeah? If you can't get kids into a proper early education today, so you're talking about only 30%. So now, if you can't get kid into a proper early education today, we are actually setting up in the unemployment crisis for 2040 right now. So you're already setting up the unemployment crisis of 2040, right now. So this is not just about finding job for today's adult. It's about preparing the next generation so they are not trapped in the same cycle. The number tells you that. So we should be very careful now that, you know, we're not giving proper early education to our children. And then what are we setting up? So we're really setting up that unemployment crisis for 2040. Or maybe the favorite one, 2063, you know, the Africa we want. And let me ask you, Namibia, what kind of economy are we building when our most developed region, cannot observe its own workforce? We're talking about now Windhoek. So, we're talking about where are the factories? Where are the tech hubs, you know, centers? Where are the manufacturing plants? Where is the innovation that turns educated people into employed people? And here's the question that I think should make policymakers sweat. So the Job and Pandas, the McHenry, the Ngurares, and whatever. If commerce, with all its advantages, all its infrastructures, all its proximity to power, you know, if it's struggling this badly, if Windhoek is there, you know, if commerce is struggling this badly, what is happening in Angwena? Then what is happening in Angwena? What is happening in Kavango? So what is happening in Kunene? So are we simply piling poverty into cities instead of creating opportunity in rural areas? So because the people will be moving, will be flooding to the cities. So we're piling up poverty into into the cities. So instead of creating opportunity in the rural area. Now, the report note that most households rely on wages and salaries as their primary income source. But when a third of the labor force can't find those wages, what then? So what then? Because that's not sustainable. You cannot have nearly 500,000 people cramped into one region with a third of the able-bodied adult sitting idle. and then you expect the social stability to hold forever. Definitely not. Yeah? Definitely, that's why, you know, crime definitely going to go up. Yeah? Crime definitely going to go up. So that is something that, as I said, the lawmakers, the government, that need to look at this seriously. Yeah? So because here you will have simply people come into Windhoek, and what do? You're just piling up poverty into the city. Yeah? You're piling up poverty in the cities. So maybe let's look at the bigger picture. So, and see what is driving this. Okay? What is really driving this? Of course we know, and this is something that we talk about most of the time, Namibia's economy is still heavily dependent on the mining, dependent on fishing, dependent on industry that employ relatively few people. So for the wealthy they generate, they employ relatively few people, these industries. And that goes back to what you hear most. We haven't diversified enough. So we haven't diversified our economy enough. We haven't industrialized enough. So we haven't created enough value additions. Something that, you know, David was just talking now. We haven't done that. So that's why we found ourselves in this situation. And we are panicking now. And we talk about everywhere, you know, let's diversify our, if everybody just let's diversify, they don't tell you now, okay, this is how we are going to do it. This is when we are going to do it. You know, it's all about let's do this. So yeah, we haven't diversified enough. We haven't industrialized enough. You know what 2030, do you know what was the vision 2030 is all about? It was by now, you know, by 2030, Namibia should be an industrialized country. That was our vision. How far are we? Really? How far are we? Now, we haven't created enough value addition. So, maybe the value addition now that we're talking about, we don't even have maybe the commodities that we should add value to. So the scrambles, we're just left with scrambles that might not actually, you know, help us. Oh, no, we're talking about oil and gas. We're talking about green hydrogen. We're talking about, well, that's the potential. So now, and across Africa, we are seeing the same pattern. We're seeing exactly the same pattern. We export raw materials, import finished goods, and wonder why there aren't enough jobs. All these things create exactly the situation we found ourselves in. The math doesn't work. Eh? It never has. So please let me quickly also see if I can get my guest for the first topic, for the first item that we wanted to discuss. Let's see if his number is open now. So okay, stay tuned. We'll be back in a second.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the Eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the Eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
All right, welcome back. Our time is about 50 minutes past the hour of 8. Well, still have bad news. I can't get my guests. I don't know what happened. I cannot get through to him. So let's see if that situation changes. All right. So, yeah, we talked about what we talked about. We talked about Commerce Region. You know, Commerce Region, our showcase, our capital region, is sitting on a social and economic time bomb. You have got masses of young, educated, connected people with nothing to do and nowhere to go. So that's what the statistic says. It's not me. The census numbers are just that numbers, right? But behind every statistic is a person. It's a person who woke up this morning wondering if today's the day something changes, you know? So behind that 34.4% are dreams deferred, dreams shattered, potential wasted, and frustration building. So the question is not whether, okay? The question is not whether we can afford to fix this. Actually, the question is whether we can afford not to. I think that's the question. Can we afford not to? So what will it take? What would it take actually to fix this? A real industrial policy? Maybe we have those. Serious investment in job creation sectors. Serious investment. Support for small businesses and entrepreneurs. Better alignment maybe between education and market need as we see that. Or perhaps more critically, the political will. So the political will to take, you know, to make those hard choices about economic transformations. So, yeah. So make sure, get to us. What is your take? You, especially those of you living in Windhoek, what is your take, about this, this statistics that we looked at? 083-336-091. 083-336-091. So you can come through. Our line is open. And, yeah. So let's, try again for the last time and see, if we can get our guest. So stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the Eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the I.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back. Yeah. Yeah, we seem to have problems. Okay, but nevertheless, all right. So life goes on. Life goes on. All right. So yeah, what we were discussing, commerce is a mirror. What we see there, the unemployment, the infrastructure gaps, the disconnect between education and opportunity that we see is a warning of what to come if we don't change course. So that means if we don't change course, this is a warning. Nearly 500,000 people, half a million in one region, a third of them looking for work and finding none. Another third so discouraged that they have stopped looking altogether. So that's what happened. That's what the stats say. And we can keep kicking this down the road. We can keep kicking this down the road, or we can confront it head on. So it's our choice. So because those numbers, they represent real people. They represent real people, and they are waiting for answers. So I want to hear from you. So I want to hear from you. What are your experience? Those of you that are in commerce region, what is your experience? Maybe not only in commerce, but also in any other region anyway, that, as I said, this is a mirror, you know. So what is your experience? Are you one of those statistics? And what solution do you see? So 08333-66091, 08333-66091. So, yeah, what is your experience? And are you one of those statistics? 08333-66091.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to...
Very good morning to you. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, that's Mike. How are you?
I'm fine, man. Yourself?
I'm all right, man. Mike.
Yeah, this is what's happening in Commerce Region.
Power reading.
And the thing is that if it's happening in the most, you know, most advanced city, you know, most urban city, what happened, you know, as I said, what happened in Anguena?
In Kunene,
yeah. Okuo, and in Rundu and all that.
Yes, very worrisome.
Yeah, no, seriously. Yeah.
Very, very worrisome. And I think, Mike, if you are saying even the what, I mean, 19% is the people who are literally
Tertiary education. 19 out of those half a million. 19%.
How come we have a lot of high unemployment if the people who are even going to do it, they're still sitting in the, I mean, looming at this, around the street? But yeah, we on these few numbers. So maybe those one who are having position now, they are unqualified people.
Yeah.
So what are you telling me? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Because it also tells you about how many, 30%, it's only about 30% actually made. It's only about 30% actually made at, what is that? Secondary school.
Yeah. The only thing is, people are employed, doesn't make sense. Seriously, for me,
That's why you have qualified people on the street. Yeah. So, The other things that you have to think, and this is what has been spoken quite a lot, and this is what I ask, what is the disconnections? It's a mismatch. What we are training our people for, it doesn't match the market.
It is.
Yeah. So that's also the problem. That's also one thing that you need to look at.
That is true what you are saying.
Yeah.
That exactly is what is happening. Because, my friend, I'm telling you, I'm involved in the one industry of construction. But when you see there, is that we even neglected that part where we are only giving it to the foreigners, especially the Chinese.
Yeah.
But this is where you put all the mixed people, like the educated one, the semi-educated, and the one who are not having education at all. Now, we find it that only the what, even capital project, this is just going to the foreigners.
Yeah, and there's another danger. There's something very interesting as well out of those. And this is the problem that when we look at those statistics, we have those statistics, but not many people actually look at that. But they tell stories. When you're talking about out of nearly 62,000 children under the age of 5 in commerce, less than 30% are in early childhood development programs. What does that mean is that if we are not giving our children a proper early education today, you're already setting up for unemployment crisis in 20 years to come.
Yes, and it's what is happening.
You're already setting up that unemployment crisis in 2040 or so.
I'm telling you, just imagine now the people who meet the requirement of what got to go in situation is 19% in commerce. But graduate looming down the street now. But sometimes I think we need to find out. Especially when I'm concerned is that even the population now we see when they release that, you know, they are more kwanyame in commerce than comparing it to others.
Yeah.
It means that maybe sometimes if we do it, if it's foreigners like the Mambian, they can even be more than our son people in Namibia. Yeah,
of course.
I'm telling you.
They can.
And it's very dangerous.
Maybe just if you have to look at how many Chinese population now here, it could be more than some people.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's very dangerous. You cannot do that. And because the history teaches us already that you cannot have more than people living in your country, more than your population. It means that people, one day they will take over. That's why we see the father of, a 5 years old and his father, foreigner, taking over the water tender, $1 billion, and then nothing wrong with it.
But think of the Minister of Health, okay?
Yeah.
Think of the Minister of Health. In terms of percentage, probably, how many are foreigners? How many doctors are foreigners? There are only few numbers of Namibian doctors. Majority of them are foreigners. So the health ministry, the health ministries have already been taken out, has already been taken by foreigners.
I'm telling you, long, even including the minister himself.
Yeah.
And we look even
that's our goal.
We are setting ourselves. Because remember one thing, that Namibia, I think our leaders, what they do is they don't care about any more Namibian. To put the Namibian first. We don't have a priority. And this is a dangerous thing which we are going with. Because remember one thing that not even one Namibia. I'm always saying no. Guys, can they tell us how many Namibian people are working even in Zimbabwe? How many people are involved in business doing in China, doing something in China?
Mm.
Maybe you can see Peter in to Namibia. How many of them?
Mm.
They will not tell you that because there's none.
Yeah.
But foreigners, my friend, just imagine a foreigner who is in position of what? Entering the Minister of Health. Where did you sit? Can one Namibian, even the current President Chan, can go
to that
and do the same?
Yeah. I mean, that's more, how would I say it? That's more, depending, how do you defend, when do you say Namibians and Namibian? So you could be born by, I could be born by Angolan. I'm still a Namibian if I'm born in this country. So,
but you know what they, what the other candidate do? Even you are, if you fall, even married to a foreigner, my friend, forget about the, getting a big position in government.
You know.
Because they know that your influence, it will be a lot. Because remember, you are with this, before I was with this.
No, but I don't have any, you don't have any allegiance to any other country than Namibia. So that's it doesn't really, it doesn't
no,
really
matter. No, we are talking about where they come from, democracy come from, in America. I'm telling you, Britain.
Yeah.
They won't do it unless you've been there for more than what decade, yeah. And then now you're, maybe you are born there, or you immigrated there when you are young. Then maybe there's a chance for you, but not much. I don't think you can reach that stage of where you.
But are you saying? Are you saying if somebody naturalized, let's have an example, the person stay here for 20 years or 30 years, and they have lived here, they have their children here now, they consider themselves as Namibian. Are you saying they are now naturalized as a Namibian? You say they cannot stand for presidency. They can, according to the law.
No, now it's happening. Like the Chinese, you know, the Chinese, they are giving more than what?
If a Chinese stays here for 30 years and become a Namibian, naturalized as a Namibian, he can become a president.
Yeah, you see now, that is a very dangerous situation where we are going in now. Because remember one thing that, I think where we are, especially when we are talking about combat, combat is just too much, I think it's only Windhoek we are talking about, and maybe Khrotog, what is Dodabs? And the other side is, I don't think, because I've been traveling Windhoek, I know very well.
Yeah.
But if you look how big is Windhoek, Windhoek is very big. Because if you go to like a place like behind there, you know, robot is hard up, né? Or it's falling under, I am not sure. If it's not hard up, it's what?
It's robot, not in commas.
Not in commas.
It's in hard up.
Falling under. Yeah, so falling under hard up.
Oh, okay.
But if you go behind our robot, you'll find a Windhoek district, which I don't understand sometimes our map how we draw. Serious, robot is not falling under a Windhoek
district. Okay.
Only that side when you are going like Trotaps, that side of airport, you are going down deep, like maybe half about like what? I think it's 100 kilometers or something. Versailles, that side, it's a Windhoek district. But when you look, and those sites where you find even the government, what, how can I put it, the settlement farm.
Yeah.
Nice one, but they are not setting up anything like even to production. And that is a question we're asking, where if you are failing to have sanitation in Havana or Goriakab and Kanja Park, will you be able to set up industry?
Factories, exactly.
It's a good question because our leaders, my friend, they are not thinking out of the box.
Yeah. I'm looking at, I mean, if we cannot be able to set up toilets, seriously.
Yeah.
How would we manage actually to set up factories?
Factories, how? Right? Yeah. If we are failing already for a single thing.
We mean toilets, Toilets and we, if we can't manage that, how would we really manage put up factories and all this? It's just beg a question to think, this is not possible.
It's impossible, my friend, and I'm even in disagreement with what you are saying. 17% is what? It's for those one who don't have sanitation.
Yeah.
It's more than that. No, it's more than that. Because if you look at our location like Kanja Park, you talk about Havana, you talk about even Ombili, you go to Goriakab, it's my friend.
Yeah.
You can see even where Havana was like having some toilet. People are queuing up like more than even 20 houses. I mean, 20 cabassos are using one toilet.
Yeah.
Is that why you call this? It's not even safe. It's very safer to go to the bush because remember one thing. It's not hygienic.
Yeah.
Yeah, because now we just imagine 20 people. You are waiting for a person to come and then you are 5 of you waiting for to use the, the toilet.
It's better go to the bush than actually wait.
I better go to the bush because you can see that, no, it's not a good thing at all. Then it is what is happening in Havana. We talk about the Goriakha, but nothing at all. Nothing, no toilet at all. People are either having this, what, unflushing toilet where they are digging themselves. And only few of them, they do that. Some, they are just using the bush. And even now, we are talking about, okay, what is this called? Where you, even if you are paying somewhere, you get a ticket. I forget that thing. Yeah. Now people just imagine, during the day, people are helping themselves. Yeah. And sometimes those books are not available, or just simple thing which everybody can see. It's not a good thing at all. And we are talking about Vision 2030. What are we doing towards Vision 2030? It's not a simple thing which you can do now. Well, when our president is going to what? To IO and talk about even sanitation, what clean water.
Mm.
But you know your situation where you always, when you are going even to Korea, she was there when it's campaigning. They have to bring the toilet along. Huh?
Yeah, no, if you have to bring fast toilets, you know, what would you campaign next time?
No, they don't need to. It's what I am saying, that every time they are complaining, when they're coming there, they might not bring their toilet or water. They must just see how the people feel. I mean, they must just live in the situation where the people are living.
All right, man.
Yeah. All right, my friend.
No, thanks for coming through.
Okay, cheers.
Mm-hmm. A very good morning to you. A very good morning to you. So what is your experience? What is your experience? Not only in commerce, but in your region as well. So are you one of those statistics? So what is a solution do you see? So do you see any solutions? So 08333-66091 to come through and have your reaction to our first stories. So if not, we move forward. There's this piece by in the Conversation Agency. So about what is that the African trade block, why they have failed achieving meaningful continental integrations. So in this segment then we're looking at Africa big dream of unity. So we look at those, what is the big dream of unity through trade, to us through trade, and why after so many years, after so many decades of trying, we still actually stuck at the starting line. We still actually stuck at the very starting line. Now let me take you back, okay? Let me take you back a little bit. In 2019, African leaders gathered. They shook hands and signed documents and announced the African continent, a free trade area. One continent, one market. Imagine that, okay? One continent, one market. Now, over a billion people trading freely from Cape Town to Cairo, from Windhoek to Kigali. You know, it sounds beautiful, isn't it? It sounds very, very beautiful. So, and finally, Africa is rising, kind of like we see that Africa is rising. Africa is united, and Africa trading well with itself instead of begging for scraps from, you know, at Europe's table or sending our raw material to China and only to buy back finished product at 10 times the price. So we kind of said, well, yeah, we are rising. That was the idea. But here's the painful truth. Here's the painful truth. 5 years later, the dream is limping. You know, limping. Eh? Teishongola. Jodo teishongola. So it is tumbling. The dream is tumbling. So, and this article from the Conversation we are unpacking now, tells us exactly why It tells us why. Four big reasons why our regional trade bloc just not delivering, why they are not delivering. So let's look at some of those reasons because they are very interesting. It is very, 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 very interesting. Okay. Let's first go to the caller and see what he or she has to say.
Very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you too?
I'm fine.
Okay, you say Africa is rising.
Africa is what? Is, yeah. It's that's what we hope for with when we created the continental free trade area. So that was the idea. But yeah, we are limping. So according to this report, yeah, we are limping.
Yeah. We should be limping also sometimes there because we remember a lot of preconditions that have been made for us to submit ourselves to some of those preconditions.
Actually, that's one of the reasons. Maybe not putting it in the way that's there, but you know, maybe do you want to listen a little bit and come back? Maybe you will have a better, you know.
No, I've been listening to you.
Oh no, on this one, not the previous that we talked about.
Okay, let me listen and come back here.
Yeah, on this one, yeah. not what okay. I was talking earlier. Just go and listen, okay. And then maybe come back later.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, let me just, you know, because these are very, very, very interesting, and he was already bringing up some of those reasons, okay? So some of those reasons why we haven't really, why the regional trade blocks haven't yet delivered, okay? So, yeah. So first up, the first one, this one is very hard. We are still dancing to colonial music, all right? And this is actually more relating to, I think, what Uncle Bono was actually getting into. We're still actually dancing to colonial music. Yes, you had that right. Now, the colonizers left 60-plus years ago. They left almost 60-plus years ago. Now, but we are still organizing ourselves according to what? According to the border they drew. The way we organize ourselves is still according to the border they drew, the system they have built. So we still actually organize according to the system they have built. We do whatever we do is still according to the system they have built and the economic relationship they have designed, you know, and they design the economic system, the economic relationship they design to extract our wealth. Now, think about that, okay? Think about it. Now, think of this. Who decided that Namibia should be in SADC, the Southern African Development Community? Who decided that Tanzania should be in both SADC and East African Community? Yeah? So now, these arrangements, according to, you know, the article, they say, these arrangements were not built from scratch by African, you know, they were not actually built from scratch by Africans asking what makes sense for us. No. So when this was built, it was not like, okay, African, now from the scratch, kind of like building what is making sense for us. No, they were often just upgrades. They were just upgrades. A fancy new paint jobs, if you like, on a colonial era structures. Yeah, it's kind of like a new paint job on a colonial era structures. So think of this. We inherited Francophone blocks. Yeah? The Francophone. We inherited that. We didn't, you know, we didn't, as I said, we didn't look at, we didn't actually, excuse me, we didn't build those from scratch. Yeah, we didn't build those from scratch as African asking now, what makes sense for us? Think about that. So we inherited the Francophone blocks. We inherited the Anglophone blocks. What is the Portuguese? We inherited the Portuguese Lusophone blocks. Yeah? So we inherited trade routes designed to send copper, diamond, cocoa, out of Africa. Not across Africa. It's not like this. These were designed to send things out, to extract things out, not across Africa. And here we are, decades later, still following those same path like ghosts haunting our own continent. So, and ask yourself, why is it easier? Why is it easier for me send good to Europe than to neighboring Angola? Seriously, just now. Why is it easier for me to send things to, you know, to send goods to Europe, like the business that we do? It's easier to send goods to Europe. Our fish and whatever, our fish, our meat and all this, it's easier to send goods to Europe than actually to our neighboring Angola. Okay? Why does our electricity grid connect more smoothly to South Africa than actually to Zambia? So because the infrastructure, the legal frameworks, the current zone, they were built for extraction. They were built for extraction, not integration. And I found that very, very, very strong. I found it very, very, very enlightening, actually. So here's my question for you, Namibia. Can we truly then unite Africa using the very structures that were designed to divide us? Are we able to do that? Because the structure that we are using, they were actually designed to divide us. So we needed to design structures from scratch. But no. We just actually repaint, you know, with a new paint on what was actually, you know, designed by our colonizers. So that's one thing. So let's talk about the second reason. Now, the second reason is the informal economy. All right? So, okay. Maybe let's...
Very good morning.
Right.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Morning.
So, Africa free trade.
Yeah.
Listening to Zandile was also complaining about that. Africa, they cannot trade in, by themselves, because when they have enough or they are producing something in that country, you cannot bring in yours.
Yeah.
To competing with their local. And that is what is also an issue on the boardroom. That, okay, the time we are producing to feed SADC, for example. Let me say tomato in Malawi and onions in South Africa and maize meal in Zimbabwe.
Mm.
So, but okay, they are their market research is to say Namibia is producing a little.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have to have market to that. But when you came here, agronomic said, no, you are not bringing your product in this time.
Yeah.
So where are now the free African trade now?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So those are the issues that we need to look at the angle that. It's not the way we are saying is what, but competition, capitalism competition. If you look at France and British, so that they are trading, they are competing according to the customs so well.
Mm.
So you bring up your Jaguar, you bring up your Fiat, you bring up your what in the market.
Yeah, you compete with other product whether it's in your country or not. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That is what.
And your market is actually Europe, not your country.
Yeah. But if you go to the policy of agronomic policy of importing things, they are said you cannot bring it in this time.
So what if they were having a factory for clothing? They would say, no, don't bring in overalls yet. We are already making those ones.
Mm.
So you see, that is why the African trade cannot be applied. And that is what I'm seeing, that it's not really a colonial mind that was brainwashing us. No.
No, no, it's not the brainwashing. It's saying that, and here's, to be clear, it's saying we didn't change the system. We just adopted the system as they are. We didn't, from scratch, we just give it a different color, you know?
Yeah, but if you look at in the service delivery to the government, as I said, if you look at in the capitalism, what was happening in 1920 to 1960s. So they were also focusing on how to including local, how to including indigenous in for the farming, for the cattle farming industry. So they were putting up the infrastructure for everybody from Katima to Rwakana, from Rwakana to Ranyemun. Yeah, to do that, no matter it's a communal, they were wanted to supporting on that. And that is what you are including in the market. But unfortunately, when the representing agreed, and that is where the system end up broken. And for you now to repair that, you have to repair with the new, with the adoption of the European. Maybe if you have the new one, I don't know now, because we are living with those European roads. Success idea.
Yeah.
No, not really the roads that they are putting it in. It's a success idea that to copy on, because the old system that you want to use. Yeah, but if you look at even our indigenous the role for governing the queens and kings, they were doing the same issue. And the battle, it was even the battle system, it was also the same issue. Because it was engineered from the Mesopotamia, where the countries were visiting each other. And if you look at what is happening to Ethiopian Egypt on that Bible history, you can see the same.
Yeah.
So I don't see if there is a new rules that can be applied to African than the one that is succeeded in Northern America. So for that's what I'm saying. If you look, you listen to some of this guy who won the board meeting, they said no, it's not applying, because sometimes if you want to bring your chocolate cake in Cote d'Ivoire, they said no, we don't want it, because we are also producing cocoa to ourselves, so we have to make chocolate in this country. So that is also the problems that we have. It's not something that we can say we are not ready to competing with each other.
But there's still certain things. Say for example, there's still things like the trade that we have between South Africa, mostly what we have between South Africa and Namibia, because of SACU, you know. Yeah. So now that can still actually be. That's kind of the relation that can still actually be able to set up, you know, with other African countries. And because there is a question, why it's easier for me now to trade, to send good to Europe than actually to neighboring Angola, for example, you know? So what are the communities that we can trade? What is that we don't have that we can, maybe we can, we don't have oil, you know, why are we not trading with Angola in terms of that?
That's what I'm saying. The issue here, the Angolans' oil are not in the hand of, no matter they are in the hand of the Angolans. Them, they don't want to do business with us in exchanging of what we have. You understand? That's where the problem is in African countries. That's why I'm saying the problem is on the boardroom. It's not on the as it appears on what we are seeing between those two countries, diplomatic, that they are agreeing some, but when it comes to importing those things or to exporting those things into those countries, they said no, this is not the product that we need.
Yeah,
you see, those are the issues that we have in Africa.
we are not ready to compete with each other, because they know if they are opening up Namibian borders, Namibia will getting more product from South Africa in a bark,
yeah,
and come to bring it to Angola. Then for us Angolans to go to South Africa.
Okay.
Now.
All right. Let's right. Okay, good. Thanks for coming through.
You're welcome.
All right. Quick break, quick commercial break, and then we continue, because I want to finish this because they're very interesting. Okay.
Imba ya rire ombwa nai etepa weda ko ombuni kiro ombe ombi hukusha. Onjiviro yoye irire ombupu o hakaane na wina ikare no matha ko murungu wa indu. Wariro ngere kusha umune ondengu okuura ko imba. Una ovyu nevya peke ko gondola mirongo vitati na hambu umwe mumwe stoo. Kwika ovinki no kukara norupa ondando ya peke yukianja oshimariva. Olo peresente dano kumyeze vitatu moshimariva. Olo peresente umurongo kumyeze hambu umwe moshimariva. Olo peresente umirongo ivari na dano. Media Murongana, Vivari Moshimarifu. Itororera ontengu, Chimayu Ungura na Wakove, na Wina Onyanukife. Ashiesho imba, yekupe Oshimariva, Shishihina Omarihiro. Imba, o Maurongane no Oyeku Hakainina, Itako na Wina Rishangita, Jinon.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the I.
All right, welcome back. And we are looking at why our regional trading bloc are not delivering. And there are four reasons. We're looking at these articles actually giving us four reasons why they are not delivering. One, we're looking at that we adopted, you know, we adopted colonial systems. Maybe the idea was that if it's not broken, you know, don't change it. Okay. So, but at this point in time, so as I said, many other things that, as I said, they were designed for extraction rather than integrations. And that's why maybe it isn't working. All right. So that's one thing. The second reason is an informal economy. Now, and this is huge. So, You know that woman at the border selling fat cook, and dry fish or whatever. So that guy with a truck full of secondhand, clothing crossing from Zambia, and the traders at the taxi rank moving mobile phones and fabric and spare parts. You know that? You know those people? So that's where the real African trade is happening. Okay. This is where now the real African trade is happening. Not in the boardroom, you know, as the caller said, not in the boardroom, not in a trade agreement signed by men in suits. So, but on the dusty road, as they said, in the market stalls, okay, in the back of the minibuses, that's where, you know, the trade is taking place. Now, estimates suggest that informal cross-border trade makes up to a massive chunk of regional commerce. Now, some say 30 or 40 or 50% in certain regions. So now, these are the people now feeding families, people who are creating jobs. So this informal, and we know that in Namibia as well, informal is the one that keeping economies alive. So now, but here's now the problem. So the problem is that our fancy regional trade blocks, what do? They barely recognize this trade exists. They barely recognize that these traders exist. The agreement talks about tariffs, custom harmonization, rules of origins, all things that sound great on paper. So, but the woman selling tomatoes at the Oshikango borders, she doesn't have time for paperwork. She doesn't have the business registration number. You know, she's just trying to survive. So we have built these grant integration schemes that ignore the very people doing most of the integrating. That's what the article is saying. So it's like planning a wedding and forgetting to invite the bride and the groom. So now, how can we call it African integration when sidelined the millions of Africans who are already integrating every single day on their own terms? Shouldn't the informal traders be at the center of our policies? Not an afterthought, as is the case at the moment. So that's the second reason. The third reason is overlap, confusion, duplication. Call it what you want. It's a mess. So now, right now, Africa has 8 recognized regional economic communities. 8. And countries are members of multiple blocs at the same time. I talked about Tanzania. Tanzania is in East Africa, in East African community, and also is in SADC. So Eritrea and Sudan are in multiple groups. Yeah. West Africa has, and if you look at West Africa, West Africa has ECOWAS and the EUEMOA, how do you call that? WEMOA or something like that. So operating side by side. Now, imagine you are a business person trying now to export your product. Which rule do you follow? EAC rules, SADC rules? What if they contradict each other? What if the tariff is different depending on which agreement you are using? It is exhausting. It is ineffective. It is expensive. We miss you. We miss that call. Please do come through. Come back. We just miss your call. 083-366. So he's saying that it is exhausting. It is inefficient. And it's expensive. So, and here's the real tragedy. Instead of rationalizing, instead of streamlining, we just keep adding layers. We take the old colonial frameworks, slap a new regional body on top, create another secretariat, hire more bureaucrats, and hope it works. It doesn't. So we are building a house by piling old furniture on top of each other and calling it architecture. Eventually, it's going to collapse. Yeah.
Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yeah, mate.
Okay, good you're morning. Back. Yes, okay, man. You're back. All right, then.
Yeah, I think what I was thinking is that the preconditions that I was talking about also involve some restriction.
Yeah.
And I know that in terms of negotiation, we should be able to give them some preconditions.
Mm.
So when we are, for example, bargaining for some steps into various different sectors
yeah.
in the economy. So the fact that the reason why they put they restrict some of the products not to come in is to protect the local ones.
Yeah.
And that protection is not a protectionistic kind of capitalizing or creating a monopoly of economy. No. It is actually to exercise caution that yes, if there are our producers in our country, their produce and all these other things, or even the service that can be procured within our domestic market, then you obviously you just have to put some restriction. So, and even though there is the Africa free trade, Africa continental free trade.
Yeah. So that's the question then. That's the question. When are we going to make that a reality? You know, if we have restrictions, that's the question. Yeah.
No, the restriction does not mean that you will not realize your goal. Just to make sure that because every individual country has the responsibility to create a neighboring environment and also to allow their own people to have access to the market.
Mm.
So the same applies to any other area. So the restriction means that, yes, there are those countries who are producing. And when they are overproducing, they might also convert their products that is in more supply to convert them into any other activity. I mean, other products, like even just like us also. If we now make sure that, yes, there are these potatoes or whatever products that are imported in the country as compared to exports, then you obviously now say, fine, you redesign, you have some system that can transfer those things, convert them into finished products. Like tomatoes, sometimes I'm hearing tomatoes are going bad and all these other things, they are getting rotten. So they are rotten, getting rotten because we are not finding the technology, the right technology that can help to convert those things. Those people who are now, you know. So it is a value added kind of approach that we have to have. So when they become so much in the market, what do we do? So then we might also then release, allow some of the, you know, tons to come in. And once the ton comes in, then they be converted. Those who are coming from South Africa, they can also be converted into finished products here.
Yeah.
So if we are diligent enough and they become so well mobilized and organized, so we can do that. So the iron and all this uranium and all these other things, any product that is making issues, because if other countries are producing those things, and the good thing is that we have just to have to combine. So the green energy and this fuel and all these things, because still, we don't even our emission into the environment is very minimal, 0.1, 0.1, and things like that. So we can always give them some precondition the way they used to give us some preconditions.
Yeah.
They say, yes, here we have our natural resources here, and you cannot extract them out. When you extract them out, you cannot export them low. So those are some of the conditions that we can give them. So we want our people to have this benefit and then the creation of employment, so. You can always, you are in a stronger position to bargain on your own advantage. So what else? So if there are laws and policies or whatever, like you were saying yesterday, the problem is implementation.
Yeah.
So our legal frameworks are good and things like that, but there are still some where they need to be amended and repealed, if not completely. So like the ones that they are doing now on the oil and gas and things like that. But we have been explained about the operation of that thing, so it's quite a good thing, and they will see whether the implementation action plan will be now faster. I mean, it's track, you know, speed up, and so that we can get better results.
All right.
So I think we are just on the good side, but because of the population, because of the maybe technology, that's where I feel that we have more advantage. But where we can leverage and enhance our energy to leverage on those things, I think we're still going well. Thank you very much, Mike.
Thanks for coming through.
Good.
All right. We're looking at the why the regional bloc, you know, the regional trade blocs haven't really delivered. They haven't delivered, and we look at some of the reasons. And the fourth reason is actually the mission creep. This is when organizations lose focus. They lose focus and try to do too much. So the regional trade blocks were supposed to do one thing. Okay? One thing and one thing only.
make it easier for us to trade with each other. So that was the goal. Make it easier for us to trade with each other. Lower tariffs, harmonize standards, build infrastructure. Simple, right? Eh? That was the goal. But somewhere along the way, they started doing everything else. Security, governance, conflict resolution. Suddenly, ECOWAS is sending troops into member states. SADC is mediating elections. The EAC is talking about political federations. So now, don't get me wrong. Security and governance matter. They really do matter. But when your trade bloc start acting like a mini African Union, things get muddy. So priority crashes, eh? Resources get stretched for the countries as well. And the countries start wondering, wait, what are we actually trying to achieve here? Huh? So look at what happened recently in West Africa, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger. Three countries pulled away from ECOWAS. Why? Because ECOWA wasn't just facilitating trade anymore. It was imposing sanction. It was threatening military intervention, getting tangled in politics. So it was no more facilitating, it wasn't facilitating trading anymore. So when you blur the lines, trust breaks down. And without trust, I think integration dies. Integration does. So, now, ask yourself, if we can't even agree on what our regional blocs are supposed to do, how can we expect them to succeed? How can we expect them to succeed? So, and right here, let's get back home. African regional trade blocs were supposed to unite us. They were supposed, to help us trade with each other, build industries, create jobs, stop being the world grocery store. We must stop, help us to stop being the world grocery store and mining pit. We are a mining pit of the world. Yeah? But they haven't delivered. They haven't delivered. And now we know why. One is that we haunted by colonial legacies, we refuse to confront. We're not confronting those legacies. Secondly, we ignore the informal economy that already drives this trade, this regional trade. So we have the informal economy is already driving this regional trade. And we are ignoring it. So thirdly is that we have created a confusing, overlapping mess of institution. So this regional bloc are acting like a small African Union. So we have lost focus, letting our trade bloc drift into politics and security without clarity, So, but here's the thing. It's not too late. We can rationalize. We can prioritize, we can, design policies that include informal traders that we're talking about that they are ignored, so that are not included them. So, and we can stop stacking old system and start building new one from the ground up. I think that's what we need to do. We definitely need to do that. So the dream of Africa, the dream of Africa unity through trade, It's still possible, but only if we are brave enough to be honest about what is not working. I think we are not brave enough to say this is not working. And it's the same here. Sometimes we keep doing the same thing, and this is what is called sanity. Yeah? You keep doing the same, hoping that it brings some good result. We are not honest enough to say, this is not working. And it's okay. That's also a sign of leadership. When you say, well, this is not working, so we need to change. Yeah? And you are bold enough to change it. So we can't spend, sometimes you spend so much money into something that is really not working at all. So, yeah, I want to hear from you. So we still have a few minutes. So now, what do you think Africa trade bloc can be fixed? What is that? What can be fixed? You know, or is it the time to scrap them and start all over? Maybe. Yeah? Maybe we need to completely scrap them and start all over. Maybe that's what we need to do. All right. 08333-66091. And before I go, I want to do the 10 most import-dependent countries in Africa. Okay? We still have actually 10 minutes. Just a quick one. You can come through, but this is interesting. Something just get stumbled on it. 10 most import, and I want to do it because Namibia is on this. Because Namibia is on this. Good morning.
Yes, Dr. Mike.
Quick one.
Two minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see, man, if we can not learn from this three countries.
Yeah.
What they are doing, like Burkina Faso, Niger, and Mali, I think as African we are just doomed. Yeah. Because look, those guys, they are just, not even less than 5 years, but they are very strong military between their three countries. They already established even a bank. So many things which are going through.
Yeah, there's actually a story I wanted to run today about Burkina Faso, who actually Traore banned all the political parties in the country. So, yeah, that's for a different day. That's maybe for tomorrow. But yeah, no, it's something interesting to look at. You know,
it's very understandable. You know, that's why I'm saying this democracy is not working in our favor.
Yeah.
If a person is doing well, look at Gaddafi. It was one of example from our African leaders. If you are not people who like, you are getting married or getting a car and house, you are not in institution, you are not paying your hospital bill. Come on, what else do you want as a person?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. This thing of democracy where we are changing president every time and then it's not working. That's why I congrats now. Because most of, we didn't understand before, because I was one of the complainers about what, why oil is able to be moved for the president office. Now they are coming with a clear that they are creating to deal with, which is understandable. And this is what we need as a country, Namibia. Because most of the people, if you are so in individual person,
Your phone is actually now breaking up here.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know we can't hear you anymore. All right. Okay, good.
All right. Let me use this 7 minutes for this interesting, the top most import depend countries in Africa. Top 10 most import depend in Africa. So, yeah, now when we talk about import dependency, we are simply asking for every dollar a country produces, how much of that goes to buying things from overseas? So the higher that number, the more vulnerable a country is when prices jump or currencies take a hit or something like that. So let's count the 10 African countries mostly dependent on imports, you know, and more importantly, why this is matter. So let's start from number 10. Number 10, we have Mozambique at 53% of GDP, of their GDP, of the national GDP. So So just over half of what their economy produces goes towards, over half of what their country produces goes towards import. Why? Because there's a lot of big construction projects that are taking place, and the fact that they don't make much of what they need at home. They are bringing in fuel, they are bringing in specialized equipment and material for their growing natural gas industry, because that's one big thing in Mozambique. Yeah, think of it as building a house. You know, you need to buy a lot of material before you see the finished product. So 53% of the GDP. And then at number nine, we have Eswatini. This all in a SADC, 54 of the GDP. So this small kingdom depends heavily on its neighbor, South Africa, for almost everything. They depend to South Africa for almost everything. Fuel, chemicals, machinery. So it's part of a trade agreement called, you know, South African Custom Union, SACU. So which makes importing easier, you know, to make it importing easier. But easier doesn't mean less dependent. So it should mean less dependent. So, and at number eight, we have Cabo Verde at 54% of GDP. Also, Cabo Verde, beautiful island nation with a tough reality, actually. Not much farmland, not much fresh water, you know. So what happens then? They import food, they import fuel, they import building material by ship. And when you live on an island in the middle of the ocean, definitely you don't have many other options. So, yeah, but they're coming at number eight. So they're coming at number eight. They are still not the worst one compared to, you know, to other countries. At number seven, we have Tunisia at 56% of GDP. So, and here, they also, in Tunisia, they also very busy with factories. Factories need raw materials, and their people need food and fuel. So the problem, paying for all those imports has been draining their foreign currency's reserves. And it's like a family watching their savings shrink, actually, while trying to keep up with the grocery bills. So, yeah, 56% of their GDP, of their national GDP, it comes at number seven. At number six, it's Guinea at 56% of national GDP. Now, here's a surprising one. You know, Guinea, this country produces bauxite, you know. Is it called bauxite? Yeah, bauxite. A key ingredient for aluminium, you know. So, yet, they import refined fuel, rice, heavy machineries, and all that. So, they are selling the raw material, but buying back the finished product. Sounds familiar? should sound familiar. So, it's a pattern we see across the continent. So, it coming at 56% of their national GDP. So we're talking about country that are import dependent. Okay? So they're import dependent, and we're coming from number 10 to number 1. So we are at number 6. At number 5, we have actually Libya, at 57 of GDP. And now here's a country that this country, Libya, export crude oil, but still import refined petroleum. You know, yes, that's true. That's true. They sell the oil, ship it out, and they buy back the gasoline and diesel. So that's what we call, you know, that's what it's called, the resource curse. If you have heard that word, the resource curse or a resource paradox. you know, political instability in Libya hasn't helped as well, because it hasn't helped them actually being able to build refineries that they need. So because of some political instability. And at number four, you see where we are. And I'm coming from number 10. We are at number four. Namibia is 68% of GDP. 60% of GDP. So this is a country rich in diamonds, rich in uranium. We're talking about uranium, early morning scoop and diamonds. So yet still importing two-third of its economic output. So we bring in fuel, we bring trucks, and even wheat from South Africa. So even wheat from South Africa, having resources, it's actually is one thing. What it's actually teaching us is that, you know, when we look at that Namibia, is that having resources is one thing. Having the capacity to process them is another. So 68 of our economic output, you know, it's from import. So at number three we have Mauritius at 78 of GDP. 78. Well, we can understand Mauritius. This is a small island with, they have actually suffocated economy, tourism, banking services, you know, banking and services. So, but no natural resources to speak of. You know, they import fuel, textile, raw materials, and specialized machinery. So, and their strategy is make up for it by exporting services. So far, it worked, but, well, it is a balance act. It has to be a balance act. And number two is Lesotho, 99% of GDP. That means almost at the top. Not almost, it's at the top, at 99%. Nearly everything this country consume come from outside its border. Everything they consume comes out from its border. Completely surrounded, of course, by South Africa. It's like a geographic island. Okay, they import fuel, electricity, everyday goods. They import. When your neighbor now control your supply lines, you are along for the ride, really. You're along really for the ride. So, yes. And at number one, and also Lesotho and Somalia really are more or less at the same time, at 99% of their GDP. So Somalia, also 99%. And for Somalis, actually for heartbreaking reasons, you know, decades of conflict have left the country without factories, without farms that can produce enough food, you know, without basics, literally without basics. So over a third of their imports, food, over a third of their import is actually food. When global grain price goes up, Somalia feel it first and feel it very hard. So, yeah, this is what extreme vulnerability looks like. So there you have it, the 10 most import-dependent countries in Africa. Namibia is on there, and we are fourth. So from island with no resources to nation rich in minerals but poor in processing capacity, that's Namibia we're talking about. The story is often the same, reliance on the outside world for everyday needs. So Africa Continental Free Trade Area is trying to change this, to help Africa countries trade more with each other and build what they need at home. So, but until that vision becomes reality, these 10 countries will continue to watch global prices and currency swing with bated breath, you know, definitely. Well, and our time is 4 minutes past the hour of 10 and bring us to the end of our episode of Unpacking the Day today. So let's cross over to Windhoek, to Tate France. We'll take over with Kuthamosha. From me, Michael Shaveli, until tomorrow. Tomorrow is Friday. Let's do it again tomorrow at 8 o'clock until 10. So goodbye now. Goodbye for now. Until tomorrow.